This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A nursing home is almost always the last resort. We've all heard stories of abuse, neglect, and institutional indifference. Despite those concerns and more, they provide the best or the only affordable option for an estimated 1.5 million moms, dads, and grandparents, and a glance at the demographic curve suggests that those numbers will balloon over the coming decades. Of course, many nursing homes are well-run facilities where dedicated staff take great care of patients, but even the best are institutions, hospital-style facilities where patients rise, eat, sleep, and take medication on a rigid schedule. Now, an effort called the Greenhouse Project promotes much smaller and more flexible facilities where residents feel less like they're in an institution and more like they're at home. They're not called patients, for one thing. They're called elders. We'll talk to the director of that project in just a moment. Later in the program, a water gun war underway in the city of New York. But first, the changing face of nursing homes. If you have a family member in a nursing home, what works? What doesn't? What options are there for you in your community? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Dr. Bill Thomas, founder of the Greenhouse Project. He's with us from member station WUCF in Orlando, Florida. Very nice of you to join us today on Talk of the Nation.
Really glad to be with you, Neil.
Describe this Greenhouse Project. What does it mean for people, for one thing, to be called elders instead of patients?
Well, you know, you kind of put your finger on it when you talked about the hospital-like nature of many nursing homes. And the Greenhouse is an attempt to kind of build a new vision of long-term care or a new approach to long-term care that's really based on the idea of the virtue and the value that you can find in people, older people, and the honor we give them by calling them elders rather than residents is one way of making that honor known to others.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is there is one Greenhouse Project underway. The first ones were built in Tupelo, Mississippi in 2003. How are they working?
Well, they're working great. And one of the reasons kind of we're here talking with you now and why we're out kind of getting the word out about Greenhouse is we took 2 years to study those first greenhouses very carefully in Tupelo, Mississippi. And I can tell you that our research shows that the people who live there get good quality care. They have a better quality of life. The staff is more satisfied. And we did it on a budget-neutral basis. In other words, people can get this kind of small community residence rather than a big institution, and it doesn't cost any more money.
Describe for us what a day at a greenhouse institution, a greenhouse home, excuse me, what that might be like for for an elder.
Well, actually, a quick way to do it would be sort of to start at midnight. And at midnight, you're sleeping. And the reason you're sleeping is because you're not sharing your room with a stranger who's making all kinds of noise at night. Because in the greenhouse, every elder gets their own room and their own bathroom. And after hopefully a good night's rest, you get up in the morning when you wish. And instead of having to meet the kind of panicked food schedule routine of trying to get breakfast on the table for 160 people at once, the people in the greenhouse will make you breakfast whenever you choose to get up. And I think that's really important. And then as the day goes on, you have an opportunity to participate in kind of the community life of this greenhouse, kind of participate in the preparation of the food or the doing of the laundry or visiting with friends, sitting outside, whatever it is you would like.
How many people typically would live in a greenhouse?
Just 8 to 10 people.
Uh-huh.
So it's really much more like a family size scale than an institutional size scale. And in my view, when it comes to long-term care, small really can be beautiful. So the meal times in greenhouses often take several hours because there's no rush. People can linger over a meal with conversation. Say your family comes to visit, the people who work in the greenhouse will just put another plate on the table and invite you to sit down and join and have dinner with them. The staff eats their meals at the same table with the elders, and they share the food that they have themselves prepared. Later in the day, there might be a kind of a sit-down gathering around a big wooden dining room table where people talk about what they want to do in the coming weeks or what kind of food they want to be preparing for themselves. And in the evening, you retire to your room when you feel like it and not according to some standard schedule.
There were concerns about medical care. I mean, one of the staples of the traditional nursing home, of course, is the nurse's station where people can respond to emergencies and give you the kind of care that you might need.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, and I bet a lot of callers would have something to say about this because, you know, for every single person living in a nursing home in America, there's somebody with the exact same kind of medical problems living at home. It's entirely possible for people with chronic illness to live at home. The problem is most families, those chronic illnesses create demands that most families cannot meet in terms of social support and supervision. So we found in the greenhouse that we could actually deliver a higher quality of clinical care by de-emphasizing the medical nature and putting a new emphasis on quality of life.
Obviously, let me ask you another question. Some people end up deciding at the end of the day to put their parents in a nursing home because of dementia, difficulties dealing with, very difficult problems. Are greenhouses appropriate environments for people with advanced Alzheimer's, for example?
Actually, that's a great question. One of the proudest achievements of my professional life was the fact that these first greenhouses we built in Tupelo were entirely populated by people who had been living in a locked Alzheimer's unit. And they were able to leave that locked Alzheimer's unit and come to live and have their own private room and live in a dwelling that is very much like home. And I remember one of the elders who had dementia came to the greenhouse, kind of turned to a staff member and said, "Oh, it's so good to be back home." Because the size and the scale and the manner of life in the greenhouse reminded her of her own home.
NPR's Joe Shapiro recently reported a two-part series on the Greenhouse Project. He's been following trends in nursing homes for a number of years. He's with us here in Studio 3A. And, Joe, it was nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I know you went to Tupelo to visit the greenhouses there from the description of Mr. Thomas. Too good to be true?
No, actually, they work quite well. I was very impressed with what I saw, and they're very different from the typical nursing home, because the typical nursing home is a place where you get little privacy, you get little control over your life. You wind up living in a small room with some stranger. Some stranger decides who you get to live with. The staff decides. They decide what time you get up, what time you go to sleep, what you eat, when you eat, when you get a shower, when you go to sleep. The greenhouse model says, look, let's try to make the nursing home more like a small group home. And so they build them small. You heard Bill say 8 to 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets their own room. They get their own bathroom. And then you've got the same staff working with the same small number of people every day. And that's important because then they get to know
continuity,
the staff.
Sure.
Right. So they know that Mrs. Blaylock likes to still bake her special cornbread recipe, that Mrs. Adams likes to sing. And that helps them give those people choice and it improves the quality of life. And one other thing that's important, the greenhouse pays the staff more. It gives the staff members more responsibility. So as a result, it shouldn't be a surprise. The staff, they're staying longer. The greenhouse in Tupelo, they're not worrying about aides quitting. That's a big problem in the traditional nursing home.
Sure. And they can do all this, Joe, and still be, as Dr. Thomas was telling us, cost neutral. This costs the same as care in a traditional nursing home?
Well, charge the same. Medicaid will pay them the same no matter what. They're now in Tupelo, they had to raise several million dollars on the front end to build something new.
Sure.
And the fact that they were a not-for-profit nursing home it made a difference that they were able to do that. So there was some front-end cost. For someone who, and by the way, that was at a facility that was going to build a new wing or a new
building anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get some callers on the line on this. Let's start with Diane. By the way, the number is 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us or send us an email, totn@npr.org. Diane is on the phone with us from Cleveland.
Hi.
Hi.
I visited an Eden Alternative Nursing Home, Chase Memorial, in 1996. Up in New York, that was run by Dr. Thomas, and I had heard about it, having been working with nursing homes for quite a while and getting fed up with the commercial agendas that were being put through, and I had called months in advance ahead and said, could I visit? And they mm-hmm. said yes. And I just went unannounced. And that really is unusual in a nursing home. And I was really impressed. The staff was natural and took me around. There were, I think at that time, it was plants and pets and consistent staff, you know.
Well, Dr. Thomas, Eden was an earlier project, correct?
Right, and it was in progress. I trust anything that he has his mind set to.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure we're going to go that far, but Dr. Thomas, could you describe the difference between Eden and Greenhouse, if you would?
Well, you know, as a caller mentioned, my entire professional career has been devoted to trying to make long-term care serve elders and the people who work with elders better. And in the early 1990s, we came up with a strategy called the Eden Alternative, which is really practiced all over the United States, that helps existing nursing homes make changes that improve quality of life. And the caller really emphasized that there was changes in the environment, changes in the way the staff were relating to visitors and family members and the residents who lived there. And the Eden Alternative is a growing and ongoing effort on our part to reform long-term care. The Greenhouse came about when we realized that so many nursing homes in America are housed in buildings that are aging. The buildings themselves are becoming antiquated. Many of them were built in the 1960s and 70s, and something's going to have to be done. In Tupelo, it was an antiquated nursing home that was being replaced, and we see this pattern being repeated again and again thousands of times across America, where instead of building replacement institutions, we can build these community residences instead.
Diane, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Diane.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There are about 35 million Americans over the age of 65. By the year 2030, that number is expected to double, adding an ever greater strain on nursing homes and on the government to help pay for long-term care of the aging population. Today we're talking about nursing homes and perhaps the needs of one of your family members or friends. Tell us what you've been through, what worked, what didn't in finding the right care. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. Our guests are Dr. Bill Thomas, who's the founder of the Greenhouse Project, and NPR's Joe Shapiro. He's with us here in Studio 3A. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Kristen. Kristen calling from Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Hello to your guests. I have a question. I sit on the board of directors of a company, a family-owned company, that we have nursing homes and other healthcare services. And I think the greenhouse concept is a good concept, but my concern is, and I did look up the facilities that it was applied to, and they're all nonprofit businesses. How do you apply this to a for-profit business where we're struggling as it is to remodel, to update, to let alone build a brand new facility? When we have all sorts of other issues going on, including very rigid state controls and regulations.
I think regulations was there as your cell phone began to wander there a little bit.
Okay. Well, basically how this applies to a for-profit company, because it's hard enough to make money, I think, in the business, let alone remodeling facilities and starting over. So
we got it, Kristen. All right, Kristen, thanks for the call. Dr. Thomas.
Well, one of the great things about American society is that we have a robust nonprofit sector that often goes out and kind of takes chances and develops ideas really before they're ready for kind of maybe mainstream for-profit acceptance. And I think the caller and her business and her family will benefit in the years to come from some of the chances that nonprofits are taking to try to make this new idea work, study it, and develop it. And our goal, very clearly, is to try to make Greenhouse into an accessible alternative that's part of the mix when you're talking about what kind of care your mom or dad or your wife or husband can receive. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a great thing to see these nonprofits kind of plow on the ground, and we're very happy and we'll welcome the day when it becomes kind of a mainstream business option as well.
Here's an email we got from Elizabeth in Independence, Ohio. My father, who was college educated, articulate, active at age 80, recently suffered a stroke, leaving him without the use of the right side of his body. He's depressed. Mrs. Home hates being on the schedule of the nursing home rehab facility. He's a night person. They force him to live a day schedule. There also is a lack of privacy and respect from caregivers at the facility. Would he be a good candidate for a greenhouse nursing home? If so, how do I find one in my area as a doctor? I haven't heard about these, but they sound like a great idea.
Well, there's a few really important points to be made there. Number one, that that stroke with the right-sided weakness probably was associated also with some difficulty with speech, although the writer mm-hmm. didn't indicate it. And it's well known that this kind of stroke can be associated with depression. So it's really important that a doctor do a comprehensive evaluation and see if there's a treatable depression that's associated with that particular kind of stroke. So here I am kind of saying you can always improve the medical care that people receive. But secondly, Ohio is a great state for greenhouse, and several nonprofit organizations have really gotten involved, and the state of Ohio has been very supportive of kind of getting this innovation going. I would recommend that if the reader wanted to know more about what Greenhouse is all about, they may kind of look on the World Wide Web for resources related to Greenhouse. As you might expect, we have mm-hmm. a website that details the topic. And secondly, I put together a book about Greenhouse called What Are Old People For? And the listener would be able to pick that up in her community and read that and find out how this option might be made available for her own family.
Dr. Thomas, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Glad to be with you, Neil.
Bill Thomas, founder of the Greenhouse Project, author of the book, What Are Old People For? He joined us from the studios of member station WUCF in Orlando, Florida. While Bill Thomas works to stir interest in changes to nursing home care, the majority of the nation's 17,000 nursing homes still rely on traditional, more regimented model. More about that now from Catherine Hawes, the director of the Program for Aging and Long-Term Care Policy at Texas A&M's Health Science Center. She joins us from the studios of member station KAMU in College Station, Texas, and it's nice to have you on the program.
Good afternoon, Neil. Thanks.
Nursing homes have gotten some bad ink over the last decades, supplemented by what some would call horror stories on a personal level. What have you seen? How representative are those stories of abuse and neglect?
Well, you know, as in any industry, there are some historically bad operators, but there are also some really great nursing homes, and there are a bunch of nursing homes that are striving to get better. One of the things I wanted to point out to a couple of your callers, you know, we talk about greenhouse, and I think that we don't have to wait for a revolution in physical plant to have a revolution in the culture of nursing homes. Menorah Park in Beechwood, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland, has had a lab and a greyhound that live in the facility. It's had private rooms.
You're talking about a lab, the dog, not a lab, the facility.
A lab, the dog, a Labrador retriever.
Yeah.
I think that we need to recognize that we can have elements of culture change in all kinds of facilities, things that empower the residents and things that empower the staff. And while a change in the physical environment is probably greatly to be desired, we shouldn't be limited by the perception that that's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. You can have flexible meal schedules and more direction by residents and empowerment of staff in every facility in the country as it exists.
I wonder, Joe Shapiro, do you see that when you go to places around the country?
Oh, sure. Journalists often tell the horrible stories about the bad nursing homes. I've also been interested in what makes a good nursing home and in the people who run them. And there is what Catherine Hawes talks about, this whole movement, this what's called the culture change movement, to try to just change the way nursing homes do business and to do things that give residents more choice and also give more power to those aides who do most of the care, the hands-on care,
mm-hmm.
and to change the way nursing homes are, to make them nicer places that are places that we'd want to live in. And Unfortunately, I think that's still a small percentage of nursing home operators who are serious about doing culture change. But and Bill Thomas is part of this. In fact, in 1997, Bill Thomas and a small group of nursing home reformers met in Rochester, and I was there, and they started something called the Pioneer Network, where they came and talked about how to do this big shift in the way nursing homes operate.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. This is June. June calling us from Baldwin City in Kansas.
Hi, Neil. Love your program.
Thank you.
I am 85 years old. My husband died in a nursing home, and the reason I'm calling is because of the cost. I have a handicapped daughter, and I live in a farming area where many people lose their farms because they can't pay for the spouse's care, and the children lose their farms. But my problem is a handicapped daughter, which I am trying to protect, and I ran the costs while you were talking.
Mm-hmm.
A nursing home in Texas near my daughter at present, $4,485 a month, $53,832 a year. If you project that down to the year 2012, if I went in at 90 and stay at 2012, the cost would be $102,844 a year. In 3 years, I would have paid something like $345,180, which I don't have, and my handicapped daughter would be left with nothing. How on earth is the government, because not many people have that much money, going to sustain the cost? At 15%, I understand nationally it's 20, but I ran 15 because Kansas and Texas are cheaper.
In terms of the increase annually, Catherine Hawes, this is a huge question.
It is a huge question, and frankly, the way that the Bush administration is going runs counter to this woman and her daughter's interest. They're cutting back on federal support for Medicaid. I mean, this is an industry in which you're expected to bankrupt yourself before you get any help from the government, and I think people don't realize that and need to pay more attention to the policy that's going on. There's a bill before the Congress right now that would cut between $10 and $20 billion a year in federal support for Medicaid. So people like this woman and her friends will lose the family farm, will lose their home, will have nothing to leave children or a spouse who's impaired, and it's a national disgrace.
Again, the practice is now, if to qualify for Medicaid, you can't have any substantial wealth, Joe Shapiro. And June's point, this is something that's going to affect millions and millions of people.
Right. And right now, every state is trying to cut their Medicaid budget. So it doesn't look like we can expect big solutions anytime soon from government. Most of the hard work of long-term care falls upon family and friends. They're the ones who provide long-term care to people in their own homes. They provide the feeding. They lift people in and out of bed. Sometimes they even do medical care, like changing bandages or doing tube feedings, and that's probably going to continue. Family and friends are going to do the often heroic, time-consuming, and sometimes literally back-breaking work of long-term care, and they do it with little notice and with little thanks.
Mm-hmm. June, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
I have one more comment, and that is that I believe in Consumer Reports' latest thing. They said this long-term care is almost a joke because the expenses per day, even if you're paying if they pay you $150 a day, it still wouldn't really cover it, and your costs for the insurance would be astronomical. It just happens mine's only $60 a day.
Mm-hmm.
As I got after my husband was in, and I just dropped it because it was a drop in the bucket. I'd be broke anyway.
June, again, good luck to you. Thank you for the call.
Okay, bye.
Let me ask you, Catherine Hawes, one of the consistent problems we heard about and addressed in the Greenhouse Project by paying those who work, the staff members, more. Turnover of staff, this is a terrible issue for nursing home operators.
It is a terrible issue, and it's interesting. One of the things that research shows is that one of the biggest predictors of turnover is staffing level. And one of the national tragedies in this country is that the vast majority of nursing homes in this country have too few staff to meet the needs of residents. And that means that good staff get burned out. They go home every day knowing they haven't done as much care as the residents need, and the good ones can't stand it and they leave. So I think it's important to pay people a living wage, but I think it's also important that we hire enough staff to meet the needs of the current residents. Lots of states were making good progress in providing facilities with staffing enhancement payments, but as Joe pointed out, the states are in about the worst financial shape they've been since the Great Depression, and so it's going to be a struggle to address this problem.
That wanted to thank you for your time today. We appreciate it, Catherine Hawes.
Thanks.
Catherine Hawes is director of the Program for Aging and Long-Term Care Policy at Texas A&M Health Science Center, and she joined us from the studios of member station KAMU in College Station, Texas. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take one more look at one more example of a nursing home that's trying something different. Brenda Jennings is a registered nurse and neighborhood coordinator for Providence Mount St. Vincent, a nursing care facility in Seattle. And she joins us from the studios of member station KUOW in Seattle. Nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil. It's nice to be with you.
A couple of years back, Mount St. Vincent's nursing facilities underwent a major remodel. Could you describe those for us?
About 1990, we began a restructure of both our physical building and of our way of thinking. We went from being a very traditional model, medical model nursing home with mm-hmm. long, sterile hallways and schedules based on staff needs and convenience to a more home-like setting. We weren't in a position to just take our building down to the ground and start over, so we worked with what we'd had there for about 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
We developed nursing neighborhoods as opposed to units with more open spaces, with warm colors, and broke down those long hallways. We carpeted and tried to make it more like home. We had nursing, we used to have a nursing station that was very much isolated and set apart from what we then call patients. We now have a care area that's a part of our living environment, and we've tried to take the physical barriers out of our environment for our residents.
And those changes, those environmental and architectural changes, how do they result in changes in behavior? Did they?
Yes, they certainly have. In addition to the changes that I described, we also added full kitchens to each of our neighborhoods so that we have the ability to, for example, as Bill Thomas was describing in the greenhouse experience, we can serve our meals over a long space of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one lady who prefers to get up about 11 in the morning. She was a night shift worker. She is not going to budge. And so she has her breakfast at 11. We're able to cook what she wants when she wants it. And I think that's played out in behavioral changes just in terms of one of the things that I see is a real decrease in agitated behaviors and anger problems. I have to tell you that once I retire, the person who tries to pull me out of bed at 5:36 in the morning is liable to get hurt. You know, that's just not respectful of who that person is, and that's something that we've worked really hard to accommodate.
Well, you're saying it's improving life for the residents. What about burnout staff? What about you? Is your job easier?
Oh, well, a nursing job is never easy, but it's certainly changed. We've gone from nurses being the ones who were in control, and we've shifted that empowerment to the residents themselves. Initially, that was a very frightening thought for nursing staff because, after all, we were the people who knew what was best for our clients. But I have to say that over the long run, we knew what was best for sure for their physical bodies, but in many ways we were missing the individual and the heart, who that person was that inhabited that body. And as we have shifted towards choice for residents, our jobs have changed. For example, we no longer monitor every little bitty bite that goes into the mouth of a diabetic, or we're not just painfully conscious and snatching bacon away from people who might have some sodium restrictions. For example, I had a lady who was diabetic. Her blood sugars were almost always awful, and she was determined to have a big bowl of ice cream. In the past, my response to that would have been to make darn sure she didn't get that ice cream because, after all, it's not good for her. In our new way of thinking, we'll sit down with a person, explain what the options are, offer other choices, explain the consequences. And in this lady's case, we went through that, and she said, sure, give me the ice cream. And so we did, because because I have to say that, for example, I'm packing a few extra pounds. I don't always make healthy choices, and to assume that once a person hits a nursing home, they should surrender their ability to make choice, whether for better or worse, is just very disrespectful.
Brenda Jennings, appreciate it. Thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah.
Brenda Jennings at the Neighborhood Coordinator of Mount Providence, Mount St. Vincent in Seattle. Right now we're wrapping up our conversation on changes in the nursing home industry. Our guest is Joe Shapiro, NPR correspondent who's been following this story. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Nancy. Nancy calling us from Grafton, Wisconsin.
Hi.
Hi.
I've worked in a county nursing home for many years, and I do a lot of private duty work now. But there is a home here. It's called Whispering Meadows, and it's out in the country. And the lady and husband who run it, the lady was a physical therapist, and they built this, or they remodeled this big, huge home for about 8 residents. They have a pond there. They have birds and birdhouses all over outside. They have a dog that lives in this house. They can, the people who live there can stay there until they die. They don't have to leave when they get critically ill. They take them to the doctor's appointments. They cook together. They are happy living there, and I worked with one of the ladies who now lives there, and she had some dementia, and she couldn't stay home anymore, but she lives in this beautiful home, and she's so proud of her new house now. You know, it's like her new house. And I just think the people who run it are marvelous. They really care about these folks, and they get wonderful care, and this is what we need. I know too much about nursing homes to say that that's the right way to go. That is not the right way to go. The right way to go is with the smaller homes and with more individualized care.
Nancy, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. Joe, let me ask you a question. She was talking about the transition there from people who need, care to people who need intensive care. And this is a concern where people get ill and approach the last stages of Alzheimer's, that sort of thing. Are there new approaches in these greenhouses and other kinds of, experimental, I guess, places to cope with that problem as well?
Well, nursing homes do have to cope with that. They deal with some of the sickest people, the frailest, the people with the most severe dementia. As Bill Thomas mentioned before, though, most people who need long-term care get it in their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring in somebody to assist you taking care of a house, but you can also bring in nursing care and medical care, and you can bring in hospice care to someone who's dying. So part of what is being done in some of these new places, the nursing homes that are changing, or places like assisted living, is to figure out ways to bring that kind of care into the home and to do it better.
Here's an email, and this from Jeff Clark in Zamora, California. My wife, daughter, and I are listening to your program. We were wondering if there are multi-generational greenhouses. We always wanted to go back to a former living style with all of the generations in one home, but our parents and grandparents were never interested in our ideas. We were thinking that there are many families with children that would benefit from living with the elderly, even to the point of living with elders that are not their own family. How about providing a place that would benefit the young and the old under one roof? Well, I guess that's an answer to another problem, perhaps.
Well, actually, there's something called the co-housing movement. It's small right now, but it's the idea of people, intergenerational families or people from different generations coming to live in either a big house mm-hmm. or an apartment building, and maybe eating communally and taking care of each other. So older people sometimes taking care of the children, other people taking care of people as they age. That's the type of thing that I think we'll see. I think baby boomers will change long-term care, and you may see options like that grow.
Joe Shapiro, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
NPR correspondent Joe Shapiro was with us here in Studio 3A.